Hello and welcome to Morning Energy Live. I'm your host, Andrew Gillick, and today I have with me Jim Futh, who leads PGIM's real estate investments in data centers. Those of you who know me know that this has been a big focus for both me and Enverus, as I can't get through a meeting without someone bringing up data centers, power, China, national security, all the ancillary businesses that go around with it. Maybe because I bring it up, but why? Well, I truly believe that the AI race is going to be what defines this next decade. How we react, respond to the rise of AI and the challenges and opportunities it brings will determine whether or not the US can continue to be a global leader or not. So, Jim, no pressure. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, before we get started, I got a few questions for you so the listeners can get to know you a little bit better. All right.
All right.
All
Let's
right.
do it.
So, Jim, what was the first concert you ever went to?
Well, when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s in the Seattle area, it was kind of the grunge time, so I went to a lot of shows when I was in local shows when I was in high school and
If you say
college.
Eddie
But
Vedder, man, I'm going to be so jealous. Sorry, go ahead. I don't usually interrupt you, but go ahead. Go ahead.
actually, I didn't. Eddie Vedder was just a little bit a chapter after kind of my
Got it.
formative years. But anyway, we you know. Well, anyway, the kind of the big first big concert I went to was David Bowie when he came out with his Let's Dance album. So
Very.
followed shortly after by Bruce Springsteen and his Born in America tour.
Well, okay, that's awesome. Next. All right.
Dating myself.
Jim. Yeah. All
It
right.
is what it is.
Beach or mountains? Now, remember, this is a year-round commitment, not seasonal. What are you picking?
Very much mountains. Growing in the Pacific Northwest, we're surrounded by mountains, and yeah, I kind of much more comfortable in the mountains. Not that I don't love the beach, but a mountain guy.
Understood. Understood. All right, next. Have you been to more states or more countries?
We definitely have to be countries, but you know, it's plus or minus kind of 30 countries. But I appreciate that I'm still in the junior varsity when it comes to a lot of your guests.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of countries out there, a lot of states, lots, and you got lots of time. And they all seem to need
That's
data
true.
centers. They all need data centers, so I'm sure you'll find your way.
Yeah.
All right. What is the best energy source?
Well, I'm going to kind of cheat here a little bit. I'm going to go kind of short to medium term and then long term. Short to medium term, as it particularly relates to the data center and our AI world, is natural gas. We've just the U.S. is blessed with an abundance of natural gas, and I think it's going to be the power source that's going to kind of bridge us to a longer term solution, which long term I love nuclear. It's far cleaner, and our technologies have advanced such that it will be considered very safe by the time that that it's really our nuclear plants come on back online, and we have small modular reactors and those kinds of things.
I love it. You're like either an avid reader of Morning Energy or totally pandering to the group of listeners here today. But either way, fantastic answer. Fantastic answer. All right. Next question. What is the best sandwich?
It's got to be the club sandwich. Yeah,
Okay.
I'm a
Like
club guy
turkey
all day
club,
long.
chicken club.
I'm more of a kind of a turkey club guy. It just, it's very satisfying on all levels.
Perfect. Extra mayo, crispy bacon. I'm with you. Can't go
Yeah,
wrong there.
boom, boom.
All right. That's fantastic. All right, Jim, thank you very much. This is great. All right, so let's start here. Jim, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you found your way to the data center game and then maybe, how it's actually evolved over the last couple of years.
Sure. Well, I started actually getting involved in data centers back in the early 2000s, back kind of 2001 to 2004. I lived in Paris and I ran all of AT&T's real estate for the Europe, Middle East, Africa region. A lot of that was technical and data center space, although that was very much in the early years. It wasn't kind of data centers as we think about today. But fast forward to 2014, I joined Amazon Web Services and I was at AWS for 8 years from 2014 to 2022. And I was responsible for the real estate development for different parts of the world, originally in the US, then next in EMEA, next in Asia Pacific. And my final chapter was working with government customers who wanted to use the the AWS platform. And so that's kind of where I cut my teeth in what is now seen as kind of modern data centers. And I was I kind of pinched myself. I was given the opportunity to join AWS back then, and it's been a really fabulous ride ever since then.
Awesome. So I guess for those of us who are either a little newer to data centers or more focused on what drives data centers, like power and energy, you know, what's driving the demand for data centers today, all the new data centers today? Is it training the models? Is it demand for the traditional cloud infrastructure? Is it both? You know, how do you see the market kind of now and developing going forward?
Yeah, it's all of the above, truly. I mean, before November of 22, when ChatGPT became publicly consumable, it was traditional cloud workloads, which are, you know, enterprise customers migrating to the cloud, you know, things like gaming or Internet of Things or online shopping, or, you know, all of those, all of that falls under the umbrella of traditional cloud compute, which is still growing massively, right? When I was with AWS, we were building data centers as fast as we possibly could in order to keep up with that demand. Now, when AI kind of became a part of our lexicon, it's really shifted the demand dynamics, and it's just turbocharged the demand for data centers in order to keep up with the needs for machine learning and the inference phase, which is once the model is trained, that you and I interact with that. And so I would say that, you know, all of those, particularly right now, the machine learning workloads are probably the biggest driver of demand right now. And it's kind of, it's interesting because the locations of where traditional cloud location of data centers where traditional cloud workloads is very kind of latency sensitive. It needs to be kind of nearby where large population centers are, whereas the machine learning workloads don't have that latency requirement. And so they can really be anywhere. And really what's kind of targeting the location for machine learning workloads is the proximity to power and large quantities of power. So they can, you're seeing data centers being built in places you never would have thought of kind of, you know, 2-3 years ago. But it's really just driving about where there's, you know, huge amounts of power, incentives, cheap land, zoned land, those types of things.
No, that totally makes sense. And we'll focus on more domestically, but I know based on your experience and how you're thinking about the data center world, you're looking both domestically and internationally. So how should we think about the domestic opportunities versus the international opportunities? And where do you see, you know, the fastest growth?
Sure. The U.S. has kind of always been an early adopter of technologies and what have you, and really kind of cloud started in the U.S. It's with a large tech companies, Amazon, you know, Microsoft, Google, Oracle, et cetera. And so naturally it started in the U.S. And so the U.S. is definitely has a head start as it relates to, you know, kind of digitization and the physical infrastructure that goes along with that. The EMEA and the APAC markets were kind of second and third to adopt that. And there's still massive demand in the U.S., but also in Asia-Pacific and EMEA. Now, a lot of those APAC and EMEA markets, those kind of tier one cities and what have you, are much denser than in the U.S. And so it becomes harder and harder to add that physical infrastructure. The grids are not as robust as we see in the U.S., but there's demand globally, absolutely. But I see as you know, if you look at the growth curve, you know, there are more data centers in the U.S. than there are in any other country. So, if, you know, as far as Asia Pacific or EMEA growing as a percentage of the existing product, EMEA and APAC are going to grow faster, but on a larger denominator.
Got it.
Or smaller denominator, excuse me.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Of course. Okay, so that makes sense. Although you did just say that the U.S. has a robust grid, I'm not sure how I should think about that. Maybe it's just a little bigger and connected. We still need a little bit of work there. But maybe when what you could do is now tell us a little bit about how PGIM is thinking about the data centers, or how it actually fits into the real estate play, and how big of a market you think it can be.
Sure. Well, I've got to be a little bit careful about, you know, what I say, and I just need to kind of get out there that you know, that my opinions are my own and not those of the company. But PGIM has been investing in data centers since back in 2013. And it continues to be a large focus for our investment and on behalf of our investors on a global scale right now. Can't get into too many details on that, or I kind of get myself in trouble. But it's very much of a focus of the firm.
Got it. Okay. I mean, I guess as you think about, you know, outside of the firm or the fund, and you think about the data center market here in the U.S. in particular. How big can it get? Is it getting frothy? Like, it's in every headline, right? Or is it really just the beginning of a secular trend that I guess I may have suggested in the beginning here?
Yeah. While it is in every headline, it is, and it could be considered a little frothy. If you zoom out and you look at the digitization of our lives, right? It's our luxury. It's getting more digital every day. AI is the latest iteration of that. So zooming out, are we, you know, if you use a baseball analogy or a soccer football analogy, you know, if you use a baseball analogy, I think we're still in the first inning or maybe approaching the second inning of the game. You know, from a European football standpoint, we're still in the first 10 minutes of the game. it is that important to all of our lives. Now, how is the world going to adapt to all the digitization of our lives? And it's from a physical infrastructure, it's tricky, right? From a power standpoint, from the physical infrastructure, data centers, the designs are evolving super rapidly to take advantage of the new workloads and so on. And there's environmental concerns, there's noise concerns, there's not in my backyard concerns, and so it is a tricky balance. But we're still in the early phases of the adoption of the physical infrastructure to enable the digitization of all of our lives.
Well, as long as when we get to the fifth inning, AI doesn't play like the Yankees did in the last game there of the World Series, I think we'll be okay. I'm just
or the Giants over the weekend.
Well, PTSD. All right, Jim. Enough. I don't think there are football teams in New York. All right. So as you're thinking about investing in data centers and citing new data centers, what are the top three questions you're going to ask as you're evaluating different projects?
Sure. Probably in this order. The first is location. Where is the proposed data center? And which is really going to at the end of the day, you build data centers, for the tenants, so those large hyperscale tenants, the AWS, Microsoft, Google, Oracle, et cetera, to turn around and lease. That's why you're building them. So are you building them in a location where those tenants want to be? And I think there's many of us who have a pretty good handle on where those locations are. The second question is power. No question about it. It is, how quickly can that site get the allocation of the high voltage power necessary for that data center to come live, and how secure is that commitment from the power utility? Is it just a kind of a will serve letter, or is it contractually agreed? And then third, it's those development things like is the land zoned for data centers, or does it need to be rezoned, and those types of things. But yeah, those are the big things that I think about.
So one of the, I know we haven't discussed this beforehand. One of the topics that comes up a lot with some of the folks that we talk to are, can we bring the data centers to the power or where there could be new power, right? In rural communities, whether it's West Texas or Appalachia, is that on your radar at all? Or is it still like, we need to be closer to to Northern Virginia or Gulf Coast, or how do you think about that story or thesis?
Yeah, sure. I will say that it depends on the workload, right? If it's traditional cloud computing, traditionally those are low latency requirements, meaning that the time it takes for the information to go from point A to point B has to be super fast, and very small amount of milliseconds, right? In order for that to be a satisfactory customer experience. Now, whereas the machine learning workloads, which are really, really, really driving the demand now, can be in those non-traditional locations, right? So those Missouri, Iowa, Kansas, Wyoming, places where you wouldn't have thought about that. But again, those are the locations where there is those combination of large amounts of power. In upwards of gigawatts of capacity, and not only zoned land, it's fairly inexpensive land. Scalability is there, meaning you can kind of build at will, if you will. So it kind of depends on the workload is the short answer. The second part of that answer is as the grids get kind of tapped out of bringing the power to the site where there may not already be there. So building an on-site generation, you've certainly read in the news a number of operators contracting with small modular reactor companies, building gas turbine generators on-site. That is very much happening. Plan A is always to connect to the grid, but when plan A doesn't work out, you need to figure out a plan B, and plan B is largely bringing the power to the site.
So that on-site behind the meter, behind the fence, everyone has a little different twist on the name.
Right.
It seems like that is becoming more and more like we need plan B more and more than plan A is viable. Is that sort of what you're seeing too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. You need plan, you absolutely need a plan B and a plan C if plan A is not working out. Now, you and I can talk about how important it is from a geopolitical standpoint to for the for to build the physical infrastructure, which is critical. And plan A of connecting to the grid is just not there. You got to figure out a plan B, which is bringing the power to the locations.
Yeah, we're having more and more of those conversations for sure. And the I think the biggest hurdles are not the will or the finances. I actually think it's equipment and the people. I as we think about more and more reindustrialization or onshoring or so many of the themes that are prevalent in our economy today, I feel like the overlooked element that's missing is labor. Like, do we have the workers to build these things, in your opinion? Or is part of the backlog just not having that staff?
Well, let's look at the whole supply chain. So, building the physical infrastructure, you can build. There's lots of general contractors who can build you a shell and core. What is trickier is hiring the mechanical and electrical engineers to build the those internal components that turns it from a shed into a data center, right? And I would say to the younger generation who are looking at positions in the trades, electrical engineering, if you get a job in electrical engineering, you're going to have a job for life. There are a shortage of electrical engineers. I would say also in the nuclear sector as well, right? I mean, think about the average person who is a nuclear engineer, right? They're about my age.
Or they're still in Annapolis right now.
Right. They're aging out of the workforce. And so I think that is that's another area where we desperately need kind of training for a workforce. Having the it's building those data centers, the mechanical and electrical infrastructure. It's also the operations of those data centers. And, you know, depending on where you are, yeah, it's tricky to you know, get the right staff. I don't know. That's probably our most acute supply chain limiter at this moment. But it is absolutely one we need to keep our eye on.
What do you think it is then? I guess what is the biggest hurdle
for building out the physical infrastructure? I would say our biggest or our most acute kind of medium short to medium term is the transmission and distribution grid, which is, you know, if you look at the interconnection queue right now, it's massive, right? I'm not an expert in that area, but it is massive. Now, right now, I read over the weekend that electrical generation is growing four times faster than the growth of the transmission grid, right? And so, which seems kind of appropriate, right? Now, it doesn't make sense to build all this generation if you can't get it from where it's generated to the actual sites where it's needed, which is that transmission and distribution grid. And I think that's our kind of shortest to medium term and maybe long term constraint for the industry at the moment.
And I guess maybe that's why you're thinking about more behind the meter, is because then you don't actually have to build it out. Maybe you need to connect in ultimately to have that, you know, reserve, but without the improvements in the grid, ISO by ISO, it's going to be tough, I guess, to really expand at the pace that we need to expand at.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you read about AWS with the Talon Energy at the Susquehanna plant, right? Now, it's kind of hit a couple of speed bumps, but Three Mile Island and Microsoft, right? I mean, that's why they're siting those data centers directly adjacent to those power sources. Yeah, and totally. For just that reason, right? Now, but if you're in, you're in Iowa or somewhere where there's not that kind of, you're looking at alternatives where you're bringing the data centers to where the power is generated. That's a plan. But again, also like the SMRs and what have you, is bringing those small generation sources to those locations. So, you know, again, that's kind of plan B, plan C.
And it's not that when you build a data center, it's not like a 1 to 2 year demand, right? Like if you're building a data center, how long are the power producers, you know, good for if they're building specifically just for one plant? Like how long is it? What's the like useful life of a data center? Forever?
Forever. Now it's not forever, clearly, right? Data centers that were, you know, kind of built in the, 2010s and what have you are not particularly useful anymore. But the modern design of data centers has a very long useful life. Those data centers that were built, in New Jersey, that service Wall Street, those were built a long time ago, but they are critical infrastructure for those use cases. Because you can't get those data centers, those physical data centers, any closer to Wall Street for the financial sector than that geography. So
Do you just rechip them? Do you just like put the new chips in? Like you just upgrade them? So they're constantly.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, yes and no, right? Data centers that were built kind of, in the 2010 area were smaller. They're physically smaller. They had like 5 to 7 megawatts, which today doesn't scratch any itch, right? It just doesn't. It doesn't get you anywhere, right? So, but absolutely, the chips and the racks of servers and what have you are refreshed, probably every 7 years plus or minus with the new technology. And but you know, the useful life of a data center that are being built today is a very, very long time. And I will tell you from my personal experience at AWS, the concept of moving out of a data center is like torture. It's not impossible, but it's nearly impossible. Super time consuming, super expensive, super high probability of customer impact, and it's the last thing you want to spend time on.
That totally makes sense. Well, so we've touched on it a little bit out throughout the conversation, as data centers and Gen AI as a national security issue, and I think we've seen that become more and more acute over the last 12 months for sure. Now, not trying to get political or anything, but considering the new, I would call it business friendly administration coming into power this January, does it change the way that you're thinking about investing internationally versus domestically, or does it just change the calculus for the domestic investment?
I mean, you know, I would say it just kind of adjusts the calculus for domestic investment. You know, there's demand for the data center physical infrastructure globally. Absolutely, in the four corners of the globe. And so, you know, from a PGIM investment standpoint, we are looking at the four corners of the globe as an investment strategy of data centers. So, from a new administration standpoint, I will offer this opinion, which is, you know, it is seemed to be more business friendly environment. And, you know, certainly from a, you know, a drilling and a generation standpoint, but, you know, my advice for what it's worth is to not take your eye off of the transmission and distribution grid and building that out. You can have all of the generation you want or need, but if you can't get it from where it's generated to where it's needed, that's a problem. You know, there's some legislation going through Congress, you know, at the moment to address this. And, you know, while it's not perfect yet, it is a step in the right direction to address those to address that transmission and distribution issue in order so that we do not, our U.S. does not fall behind in the AI arms race.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, we're definitely monitoring the permitting reform. I think that's the key to the ability for folks like yourself, as well as, you know, the power companies and the gas companies and everyone to be successful. I think you're right. I think the T&D is often overlooked because the focus has been on, oh, it's on gas or on turbines. Siemens can't get me a turbine for 4 years, or I can't, you know, build a pipeline to get more gas to this location. But it's like, well, it kind of doesn't matter, because if you can't move the power there either, it's going to be a problem. And you're seeing more and more risks around the headlines of, well, and this Amazon Talon example is perfect, because, you know, what happens when the data center's on, but it's really cold or really hot in Houston or really cold and all the power goes out, right? But the data center's still on. That's not going to play well in the next couple elections.
But let's unpack that just a little bit, Andrew. So the, you know, yes, the power's out, but do I have internet?
I mean,
right. And yeah. You know, while a lot of people had power outages because, you know, it's, you know, the internet went out for a lot of people. And that is as important. I don't know. You know, it depends on the person. Right. But it's along the same lines as of importance of having your lights on. You know, the UK has just designated data centers as critical infrastructure on the same level as hospitals and that kind of thing. And I think digital infrastructure underpins traditional infrastructure, right? Because not traditional infrastructure doesn't work without digital infrastructure. So it underpins everything that we do in our modern lives.
Now, I hear you, but if you had to choose between, you know, freezing to death or being able to log in to your Roblox account.
Well,
Just saying,
yeah.
just saying. No,
Well,
but I
yeah.
hear what you're saying. They're more closely tied. They're more closely tied than some people may appreciate,
Right.
and the need for both of them are critical infrastructure. So I guess
They are. They absolutely
that's
are.
sort of leave it. Well, look, I mean, it seems, Jim, that you have a long runway ahead of you in deploying capital here in the space, and we really appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts with us.
I
That's
appreciate the opportunity.
thank you very much. No, it was great. So, Jim, thank you very much. Everyone who's tuned in, thank you very much for spending some time with us here today on Morning Energy Live, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Take care.